Really?
Okay.
I was bored several years ago and I wondered how many different combinations of black and white squares you could make in a three-part grid.
How many what?
Combinations of black and white. How many different patterns you could make alternating black and white?
Ready to order? Not yet.
Not yet? Okay.
Oh, okay. And they can be different size squares and stuff.
Well, no, same size squares, but I was just thinking you could make kind of a series like this, a dramatic series, using this very simple schema.
Okay, I know what I'm doing. You know what you're giving, Yoshi?
I do. Oh, 512.
Calculated it out. I'm not sure. I actually did every single one. But you could do a picture series. Like
yes.
The sun going down, darkness, moon rising, yes. Moon going up.
Because what you'd have to do is figure, you know, do two different combinations. This could be white or black, this could be white or black, this could be white or black, so forth. The 2 times 2 is 4.
Yeah.
This black, this white, this white, this white, this white, this black,
yeah.
Or both of them white, that's 4. Double it again, because you're adding 2 combinations in here. So 2 times 2 is 4, times 2 is 8, times 2 is 16, times 2 is 32, times 2 is 64, times 2 is 128, times 2 is 256, times 2 is 512.
Damn. Great. But I did think of the artwork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So it could be 512 scenes in the life of this little villain.
Or a...
Two,
the coolest cigar issue?
4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512.
Huh. How'd you do on your math SATs?
I never actually took the SATs.
It just had 2 times 9.
I got flying D's in high school.
Flying D's.
I think you should have done better than that. That's
but by the time I got to college, I took the statistics class and I went into the perfect average.
Very good.
They came very close in pre-calculus too. I had interesting math instruction in high school.
Oh, I came up with a graph that really perplexed everybody. I guess it was a geometry class.
Mm-hmm.
I called it an infinity graph. You know, in the Cartesian coordinates.
Yeah.
I thought, why not invert them all? So at the center you have infinity.
Yeah.
Then you have 1, then you have 1/2, and then 1/3, and so forth. I think it got me into my college. I enclosed it in my application. And I was told that it's a very sophisticated graph. Chester told me. She's used in the space program.
Wow. Huh. Wow. I wish you could blow rings.
You put your tongue out, the point of your tongue out, and you blow around it. And I can't help you more than that. I think you got something circular in your way.
How old do you whistle?
I heard one. Oh, is that what you do, you whistle?
See, I have a good, solid whistle. That's right.
I have a bad, low whistle. I have a low, crummy whistle.
Yoshi?
Mm-hmm.
Do you whistle?
Yeah.
Can you hear it? Hand him that cigar.
apparently you puff on the cigar. If you blow it while whistling, it makes a... It's fascinating.
To make a loop.
Okay.
Make a good whistle, you have to kind of bring your... You don't just kind of round your lips, you have to kind of bring them together. Like
kissing.
Yeah. That's better, yeah.
I always like French kissing.
You have to kind of like round... You have to kind of, you know, round your lips. And...
Okay. Wow. Mark Schrett, whistler, calculator of equations.
Here's my card. It is very fitting, I said last night, that I'm going to New Britain. I sing my ditty about the hardware city where the Jellicle Guild, where the boys of the Jellicle Guild, the beer will be filled.
Wow. I like that.
That's all yours.
Thank you. That's really neat.
It's very fitting that I'm going to New Britain.
I sing my ditty about the hardware city where the boys of the Jellicle Guild. With cheer will be filled?
With beer will be filled.
Oh, with beer will be filled. Oh, that's even better. Oh, that's sweet. I like that one. I'm going to keep that one. Oh, that's really cool. You wrote that last night?
I extemporized it. Sitting in front of the fire.
That's perfectly delightful.
I'm casting out balloons now. You don't have to blow them up yet. You can if you want to.
Wow. Are these the 9-inch kind? You rub it against your pants to make it friction.
Elastic.
What?
Elastic?
Electricity.
Yeah.
Static electricity.
Yeah.
As big as you got it?
Huh?
As big as you got it or as big as you want it? Wow. Wow, that was good. Make an outline of me in balloons.
I don't like to give a balloon popping in your face, I've had it happen. So I blow them up small.
Hey!
Give one to the waitress too.
Back and say, Alex, they have balloons.
Anybody like another balloon?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Can you make a pop if you just continue blowing?
Yeah, you could.
Good morning. Would you do that as a demonstration? Is it maybe necessary?
Oh, as part of your demonstration?
Yeah.
I can't devil well.
That can be fixed.
Come on, stay.
This is the right kind of tennis.
Where is she? Roshi, you can't get a balloon. How are you going to be a goaltender for the Whalers?
You're going to be a goaltender for the Whalers one day, Roshi? That's great.
I think I'm going to try this other Connecticut cigar I was going.
It's not easy.
Did you pull it?
Was that what you have to do?
Yeah, that helps. Check out this cigar. That's a Rick. That's also a Connecticut cigar.
Oh,
right. Oh, the one over the corner over
mm-hmm.
there.
Yeah. Once you get it going. See, balloons are virgins when you're blowing them up. And you know, they're a little tight at first, but then they loosen up.
Talking about close things, you know,
that's right, I am. And I don't realize it. Whoa! That's a good one. Would you like a balloon?
Okay, I think
so. There you
thank
go.
You.
It's a pretty pink one. From you. Squishy little thing looks like a condom. I don't think people want. You don't hand a woman a flower seed, you hand her a flower.
Here's their rose seed.
Grow it yourself.
Gift that lasts a life.
There he is! Alright!
Uh-oh. Yoshi! Wow! How's it going, guys?
Hey, how's it going?
I see this guy all the time, so.
Jim! Good, how are you?
Is the motor today?
Nope, the what?
Shit!
3-2.
Oh! I still got you.
Look at your car.
I really didn't see the game today. I was putting my kids out, which is smart.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
Jim, we're just getting into the food. Did you want to get something?
No, I had a pretty good meal tonight. Yeah,
that's good.
I had a lot of salad and eggs and hot dogs. Mm-hmm. Oh, we have rooms.
See, how long did it take him to notice?
A minute.
Whoa. Wow, you knocked one down.
I was telling them that I was lovingly languishing to hear literary linguistic diatribe. Balloons! That was it! Balloons! Now I understand. He told me last night. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I had to do that.
Oh, have some. Ooh, baby.
So, what's that one for?
Maybe I
misunderstood her earlier.
How many drinks have you had, Jim? Did you have a box of alcohol in your van or something?
I had too many drinks to count. I had some gin and tonic, too. I had beef beer, Beck's beer, Guinness. My father got me some beer, too. He said, enjoy yourself in the meeting tonight, son. I said, I will surely do. He said, well, drink all that Budweiser, but you don't got enough in you. So he handed me the Gilby's and tonic. And I had some of that, too. Well, that wasn't enough. My brother came along, handed me some sheer sweet oil. They felt sorry for me. They thought I had a blue. Anyway.
Right. So anyway, I'm going to read a brand new story to me. Ralph's going to give a brief literary linguistic talk with balloons, jackknife, fire, and obscenities.
I kind of threw it to you, man. Your beard came in really good with your hair. You're at a very good level right now.
Yeah?
Right now.
Christ.
Yeah.
Don't cut it.
Fat Christ.
You don't think I should cut it?
Fat Christ. For,
should we have a so fat Christ?
No, oh, right, yeah, no, no. The length of your hair, wouldn't you say it matches his beard?
It's perfect. Yeah,
yeah, it's perfect.
Wow.
It really is, yeah. Finally hit it right.
Should we have a vote on whether I should cut it or not?
Yeah.
Should I, okay, all in favor of me getting my hair cut, raise your hand and signifying aye. All opposed to me getting a haircut, raise your hand signifying nay.
Nay.
All abstaining from this crazy speech.
All right, that's okay. It's all right.
Really?
Yeah, I noticed it last night, but I was kind of like in the dark. Like, you know, well, it was midnight, I mean, what the hell? But now, yeah.
Is it
yeah.
a good idea for me to look like Christ, though? You know what they happened to him.
Well, you know what they said? Well, you don't have to worry about Christ didn't have red hair.
Christ didn't wear glasses.
Christ is blind, so.
And no black t-shirts.
Ah.
Christ wore white.
Oh, okay.
I remember that. Christ wore the
I feel with long hair and a beard and being so big, I look very scary.
That's good.
Is that good? Is that good, Jim? That I look scary?
Looks.
I don't look scary to you. You're a big guy yourself. Do I look scary, Yoshi? You're a younger man.
Yeah,
I'm down. Yeah,
see? So Yoshi has a black belt in killing.
Yoshi's going to give us a presentation, too, on the Japanese language.
Ray?
Ray.
Oh, Ray.
Last month.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I got a letter.
And my cat was lying on the chest of drawers and started talking. The cat was under a lamp, dozing. And Ray started talking about some wild night in South Carolina. And the cat perked up, looked at him. And Ray went on talking about jumping on the cars and stuff. And the cat behaved like I've never seen it before. She jumped down onto the carpet, sort of jumped up in the air, and then ran downstairs and got into a fight with the other cat and knocked down some curtains.
Wow.
I forgot about that.
I didn't.
Actually, it's probably true. Down in Carolina.
Yes, yes.
The effect it had on my cat, I didn't understand that.
From that. Hendrix, I walk these streets for you. Here I am with this old guitar, doing what I do.
Thank you, Jim. There are two parts to every word. There's the meaning, and then there's the way it sounds or looks on a page. And in classical linguistics, it's said that there's no connection between the two. The technical term for this is the arbitrariness of the sign, the fact that part of a word that you hear or see, the sign, has nothing to do with the meaning of the word. And when linguists talk about this, they usually bring up the fact that words in different languages mean different things. What is dog in Japanese?
Dog.
Inu. In Japanese, dog is inu. In English, it's dog. In French, it's chien. In Spanish it's perro, in German it's Hund. Five different words for one thing, so how could there possibly be a connection between the idea of dog and the various words that mean dog? And then another objection brought up against the idea that sound and meaning might have anything to do with each other is that words that sound the same might mean very different things. Like beet could be a round vegetable, or it could mean hit someone. With me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I declare that sound and meaning are connected, not in all words, but in many words. And when I gave my presentation 2 years ago, I said essentially the same thing, that groups of words that began with the same letters might very well mean similar things. Remember?
Well, I'm not really. Is that true?
You will.
but not that specific thing, but I remember what it was about. It was very good. We would all like it.
I don't remember if I brought up this pair, but a hard G, G, and a K sound, K, are both very similar. They're made toward the back of the mouth. If you try it yourself, G, K, the tongue is bunched up against the back. They are the closest of any sounds in English to being made in the throat. German has sounds that are made even further back. But G and K are throat sounds. G and K made in the throat. When we talk about coughing, that has a K sound in it. That's made in the throat. And it's an action made
that's
in the
funny.
Throat.
That's funny, yeah. Onomatopoeia, but vocalized. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
And the same with the word gag. That's something that you do in the throat. It's got two G's in it. G. Now, that's a description of something physical. You have G and K made in the throat, and you have two things that you do in the throat. You cough and you gag. Then, expressions of disgust when you actually gag, those have G's and K's in them too. Yuck. Icky, gag me with a spoon. Following?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a further extension of this from the sounds to the fact that things like coughing and gagging contain within them throat sounds, then expressions of disgust, and then insults. Most insults in English, which imply a kind of metaphoric gagging. You see something and you hate it so much that you gag when you see it. Most insult words have G and K in them. And I'm going to ask you to think of them. Creep. Ethnic words. Gook.
Suck.
Crowd.
Well, no, I understand what you mean. You mean like, fuck. I mean, you mean the obscenities? Fuck, suck.
I'll get to the obscenities.
I'm sorry if I'm ahead of you.
Creep. Okay. Idiot?
Gook. No, G and K.
Oh.
Throat sounds. Gook, geek, creep. Cocksucker has three.
Motherfucker has
one.
Asshole. Asshole is one.
That doesn't have a G or a K. But the most obscene words in English do have G's and K's in them. Fuck. Cunt. Cock.
Crap.
Faggot.
What have you all got? All goddamn variations of dogs. A woman of those.
So, have I illustrated my point yet that
yeah.
The meaning and the sound have something to do with each other?
Well, I think so.
Good. I will continue. M and N are called technically nasals because they're made in the nasal cavity. Nasal consonants. Try it. Say mm to yourself and listen to the resonance behind your nose.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of a girl.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
Well,
that's
a
good one.
Notice that nose begins with M. Notice that nasal begins with M. It's a sound made in the nose, and the nose is described with that sound itself.
Mm.
It's the ingredients.
It's ingredients.
But I don't want to hear your poem. I want to hear the way you wrote it. I want to hear it all. Look, this is not fair. I was looking for you. I'm going to pick up the cable. You don't know what is going to happen if we don't hear the whole tell him what will happen.
Well, Jim will throw things. We'll rearrange the room, as it were, and rearrange the persons in it. And rearrange the walls, and he'll rearrange the ceiling. And
I will listen to Ralph. Excuse me for my barbaric attitude, but you will see some things you would rather not see. But it will happen.
Barbarian.
I will be a barbarian. Now, will you please tell me?
Bear. Brian Bear.
I just remember it's August 11th, and I couldn't get tough because that was Friday, and...
No. Okay, sit down and he'll tell it for you right now.
You told me! Sit down. I am shattered!
Jim, sit down. Sit down, he's going to tell you right now. If you sit down, he will tell it to you right now. And I will help.
I want to hear the Yoshi's grandchild.
Yoshi, I made you call.
Kidding, I'm okay. But anyway, no, not really good. But anyway.
Not much, but it's for you.
I want to hear you.
I remember that was summertime, starting from July 11th. That was the first time since I had a child in the last year's semester ended. And that was Friday. No, that was Thursday. It was 1:25 maybe. And we went to the handshakes. That was my friend's, business place is doing this stuff for me. And she keeps a child for me all the time because she knows I like it. And the next week, July 18th, I couldn't get it because it's not so warm and it went down there and had it all of them before I get there. And 25th, I had it, I had two, and that was the happiest moment of my life. And yeah, that was that. And August 4th, I had it again, and this time, it's not so good because it's not so hot and it's just a bit cold. And August 11th, I couldn't get it because I didn't go. August 18th, I got it, but it's more like the same as the previous cycle. And August 19th, that was Saturday, and that time I had it by myself by Chance. That was a mistake of my life. And they wait for the week or week next week, and end of this August, I didn't get it because I didn't go, and my school was over. And last weekend, I had several chance to eat some of the precious challenges. Those are good, but who knows?
All right,
Yoshi!
Forced to write, you know, compose at a moment's notice.
It was the way it came across in the story. That was just how I knew you. It's just the way, like, when you wrote it, came down the magazine.
Hey, calm down.
Where are the daughters?
My daughters?
Yes. Are they in Plainville?
That's Harper.
My daughters are in
have my children. They're in West Hartford right now, asleep.
So do you live in West Hartford now?
Well, sort of, yeah. Officially, I do.
Not officially.
Plainville. But officially, now I live with my folks. And I just put them to bed before I came here. So everything, you know, everything is so cool. Oh, I'm so happy.
Okay.
I can't express to myself happy.
You look happy, Jim.
I'm very happy.
You look very happy.
I have no idea.
I need more beer, and then I need to read my story.
More beer, read your story, man!
I need you celebrate.
Yeah, I'll give you a little more. I don't much, but what I give you, I got. Here, I think you should get some, I think I should get some whiskey, too.
Beer, barbaric, beer.
Here, give me a shot of whiskey, right?
Nothing, sir.
Oh! Be my guest. You're having fun with your lungs. Ah, lungs, they make us long. Down to the bone, get stoned. Do not be alone, go out, drunk. Do not become clone. Roam the streets of Austin, sing a tone. Get in the zone, I'll work out the songs.
Remember when you left that on the answering machine, Jim?
Yeah, I got a great voice.
I think that was extemporaneous. Okay.
Okie dokie. Ray will be 32 in an hour and a half.
I know. Shoving us the wall, knocking through the table, and like that. This could look like a fat Christ, don't it?
Wow.
Well, I don't know.
He does! He looks like an overweight Ray Shulan eats too much. He's an overweight Christ.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Please drive through.
Please drive through.
Okay.
Really, Ray, you're stand up a little. Stand up.
Pretend I'm standing up. I'm standing up right now.
Ray!
Yes?
What do you think? You think we got something on our hands here?
Yes, I think we could show
you. You think
exhibit
we got a new, I think you should all follow me, Doug Mahone. We got a new messiah here.
What's your message?
Hey, what?
Message is shut up and listen.
Shut up!
You heard the Messiah. Shut up and listen.
You heard that fucking Messiah. Shut the fuck up. Sorry, Ray.
See, the message has been amplified already. Okay. This is a story called "Voices, Music for the Cosmic Ruin." A new fiction. And the first part, which I'm going to read tonight, is called "Blood Remembering," September 1995. One. It was never that when the guitar was strummed, the pen set to paper, that nothing occurred. Something always happened when it got to that point. No, 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 no. It was the sometimes vile process necessary to get hold of the guitar, the pen, the walking around, the talking to people, stupid movies, missed buses, mediocre drunks, profound moments swam through, lived in, sucked up by, and left behind, and forgotten, not felled up by art's hungry, blazing hand. And those positively wicked days of remembering, the days when guitars launched joy juice songs to the nether spheres, the days when raggedy mites and spangled clowns trolled by as the unseeing pen had sheet after sheet of virgin paper, became art's horror and progressively better and better. Yes, those kind of days. Two, just add one more word, and another. Something will eventually happen. Something will live again for a little while, the duration of the act, and maybe a little while thereafter. Some of it will be false, some of it will be sloppy, some, however, will ring true. What more could be hoped for? The other day, I heard someone discuss the meaning of the word amateur, say it denotes a person who performs an activity out of sheer enjoyment.
Love.
Love, even. I think this definition gets pretty close to the motivation of Richard James Americus to make music. Records for him, like, to a great degree, the manuscripts of stories for me, are not the sacred act itself, only the evidence that the act occurred. I suppose from this viewpoint that he needs to make records even less than I need to pen stories. I suppose more purely I would simply tell stories aloud as he sings aloud. But these thoughts are important in what they intimate about the coming happenings herein. Richard James Americus is an amateur musician at heart. His mates in Noisy Children love making music as much as him, but want to wrap around this core of love the professional activities, the codifying activities of recording and touring. There's more to it, of course, but that's some. 3. I fight for these moments of living pen with everything I have, yet sometimes I spend too much time preparing for them, like a woman who affixes fancy-cut shreds of lingerie to her body, takes hours in the doing, only to be disappointed when her man fears for their remaining uncleaved, rather than chewing through the buttons and snaps and clawing off the rest. I just want to write anytime, anywhere, fearlessly, knowing somehow that what I do is necessary, and staring souls on night trains see not me but the visage of their dead loved ones in the train's window. Telling the story becomes at times, for me, an obsession with the act of telling the story. And yet, is it bad? I don't think so. If it all fits, as is my hope, that somehow it will, the story itself and the story of its birthing will fit like romancing cock perfectly in beloved and loved swathed pussy, and the cries of joy will be louder, the shout of the performance, the moan of the gestation, my pages will be curled and sopping with the sweat of panting perfection. 4. Let's drop the needle right down on the record of this moment. Yeah! Yelled the crowd at Luna T's cafe. No. As pitcher Roger Clemens struck out another Cleveland Indian and took his Boston Red Sox out of the fifth inning of Game 1 playoffs division series up 2-0. Early October 95 it is, and this day's juice ran down Lady Liberty's lips. Hard to say if her expression was rueful, ruinous, or regal. A trial of the man's actions had been concluded today, and the man's innocence had been lawfully maintained. Justice, are you a begrimed whore or a set-upon but unshewed virgin?
What are we talking about, OJ?
At this moment, a jeans-clad, bearded man fell through the door from the band room and into a heap on the barroom floor. Yeah! Rock and roll! Cried Joey, the drunken, the fallen, the ecstatic listener to Noisy Children Heaven song. He staggers up to Mr. Bob, the bartender at Luna T's, and says, be careful now, sir.
Just checking. Okay, cool.
Man, they're rocking tonight. I need another St. Pauli just to keep up. Mr. Bob is a man in his later 50s, clean-shaven, pepper-white hair, a clean white shirt and dark trousers his garb, an apron color-splashed his uniform. Adjusts his spectacles and smiles. Are you sure you need another? Joey's grip on the bar loosens slightly, and his fall is inevitable when a large hand slips beneath his armpit and props him up. Thanks, Jimmy, he says quietly to the gin-drinking aide to his cause. You just appeared in the story, Jim.
What? I appeared in the story?
Yeah, you just did.
I did.
You just helped the guy up. You're the ginger.
I know, that's what I heard. I heard he helped him up.
Jimmy.
Yeah. Oh, is that me?
Yeah.
That buddy?
Yeah. Okay, son, time for the test, says Mr. Bob. This oft-repeated occurrence draws some of the barroom's patrons' attention away from the TV. Listen, man, you know I'm good for it. It's the only way he'll get me to draw you another. Not again. Yes, son, again. Joey sighs, stands up, closes his eyes, extends his right arm, and drawing its pointer finger stiffly toward his nose, recites, from 1918 till today, 77 years, has Boston gone without a World Series championship, and touches his nose nearly as his edited statements finish. His eyes open, a fresh pint glass of St. Pauli Girl sits on the bar top before him. Delighted, he nods to Mr. Bob's question regarding adding to his tab and drinks deeply. Why aren't you in the band room, Jimmy? You can see the Sox play anytime. It's not like they're going to make the playoffs or nothing. J-
James T. Reality III receives a fresh drink and delays his answer for the space of a first sip. You go back in, Jim says. I'll be along in a while. Joey staggers back toward the door to the barroom. Bandrum. Bring your guitar, he calls. Jim tries to smile, ends up nodding instead, and turns his face back to the playoff game on TV, just as Joey is stumbling into the empty, quiet band room. 5. To uncover and reveal these past many months in the lives of Rich Americus and his circle is, I suppose, the point here. I don't think, however, that merely heaping up the details is the point here. No, not every occurrence from November 1994 to October 1995 is of great importance. What lasts from a year, like what lasts from an era, is a potpourri of the monumental and the trivial. So, a quartet of stories, engaged for the task. Each will assault a chunk of this period and find what of it endures in influence and importance these months later. Life certainly isn't as neat as what's going to happen here, but fiction, art, are not life, they're better. 6. This story concerns itself mostly with Rebecca Dorothy Americus and the life she led outside of the schoolroom walls. Having passed her 14th birthday in October 1994, Rebecca was well into the scape of adolescence. Where other girls her age were eagerly draping themselves with the trinkets and attitudes of American female teenhood, Rebecca was not lured in the least. Most girls her age she found dopey. Most boys she simply felt sorry for. Eros failed to mesmerize her. Her master was art. Her seducers were great painters from Da Vinci to Wyeth. Rebecca determined to spend ever more of her time with brush, chalk, watercolor, paper, and canvas. Her pleasurable reading outside class consisted near completely of art books. The apartment she shared with her father on Harvest Street discovered to its visitors walls in every room covered with the prints of the master's work along with a modest few of her own efforts. Life outside art seemed ephemeral and pointless. What reading she did beyond art books was almost entirely great literature. Her English teacher and counselor, Ray DeLuth, had labored to connect her love of the beautifully rendered stroke with his love of the beautifully placed syllable. He was surprised to discover her familiarity with Rilke, Dickinson, Frost, and Shakespeare until he reflected on how literate were her father's albums. Then DeLuth executed the finest intuitive moment of his teaching career, knowing she was bound for high school the following September. He decided that this most dear of all his students must execute a project far beyond the usual run of book reports and such. Upon this miracle of teaching, of listening well and giving most generously, is found the chugging heart of this story. 10. The night Ray DeLuke chose to visit Lunatee's Cafe for the first time was in early December 1994. He had been holding off on making this visit.
94.
Waiting for the right night, for his perfect mood, bars had long ago been foreign to his life. Years back, he had tried to lead a kind of roughneck but arty life in San Francisco, brought copies of Crime and Punishment and Magic Mountain and Being and Nothingness into piercingly loud bars blasting Led Zeppelin and Jethro Tull, discovered the noise and the booze and the delectable women looking at him were too much distraction, drifted thence into the cafe scene on Haight Street. The night eventually came. Singularly, Rebecca was absent from school that day. Not wishing to play the truant officer, but still curious, Ray decided to pursue his curiosity to Lunatee's Cafe. Pulled his 89 Ford Escort onto Reckoning Road and thence to Lunatee's parking lot. The lot was nearly empty, though perhaps it was just before 5 o'clock that explained this. Walked the length of the building's street-facing side to reach the bar entrance, which he had gathered from Rebecca's scattered mentionings of it was the main entrance. Pushed the door inward to enter, but was nearly blown back by the roaring speech of an old man at the bar. In this land where the vile and vain prove sin victorious time and again, in this befouled state whose every shambling day clots more completely any living remnant of its original settlers' elevated purpose, in this democratic courtyard of foul beasts and beastly fowls, an aging healer of souls and men such as myself can only huddle mutely over his diminishing flame of porous rectitude. Saloon keeper! As the rueful time of my meager demise draws nigh, betokening a slight intimation of the fast approaching blissful annihilation of all. Let me not want for the ephemeral comfort which my libation may dutifully, if humbly, offer. Crieth Dr. Arnold T. Knickerbocker.
Crieth?
Crieth.
My goodness.
Long before his hyperbole had ceased, Mr. Bob the bartender had set Mr. Bob the bartender had set a fresh cup of black whiskey laced with whiskey before him. It was the barman's calm response to the crazy old preacher which dissuaded DeLuke from departing there and then. Two, a more thorough study of the bar's interior suggested not more to fear than the usual outbreaks of fulminating which even his limited long-ago experience had tutored him in. A dark bar, some tables and chairs, rock posters on the walls of groups DeLuke knew, Beatles, R.E.M., Who, Clapton, and Noisy Children. A same-looking barman in his 50s in the comfort of a TV mounted in the corner, meeting of two walls, set on the channel broadcasting CNN. So, step in. Take a stool at the bar, though a safe distance from that preacher. When a bar is near empty, the personality of its barman becomes quite evident. A barman such as this one... Jim, sit down.
Oh, okay.
A barman such as this one has stepped up to the spot across the bar top from you, used a clean damp rag to wipe the place before you, set down a coaster, and offered a polite hello paired with a jovial smile, was indeed every drinking man's friend, whether he be a Cecil Gray or Jim Reality, who all but lived at Lunatee's Cafe at times, and found there with a strong drink in hand many of the most satisfying evenings, or a Ray DeLuke who wasn't much of a drinker, preferred the soft companionship of a female in a sedate scene, and was a veritable stranger on an odd mission to this place. Good evening, said Mr. Bob. Good evening to you. What's your fancy, bud? On light beer? St. Pauli girl? I guess so. I'm afraid I'm not much of a drinker. That's okay. I'm not much of a drinker anymore either. Water on the rocks is my pleasure these days. Say, this isn't bad. It has its flowers. Say, my name is Charles Robert, but my moniker around these parts is Mr. Bob. My name is Ray. Ray DeLuke.
Water on the rocks.
Yeah, Mr. Bob's an alcoholic. He doesn't drink.
That's a shame.
Yeah. But he serves you drinks.
Must be a hard life.
At this disclosure, Mr. Bob's calm face grew excited. You are little Rebecca's teacher? Ray smiled. One of them, anyway. Mr. Bob pushed DeLuke's money back to him. Son, your money's no good here. Rebecca is this little place's pride and joy. Anyone who's helping her along her way is an instant member of our family. Suddenly his pleased smile took on a mischievous quality. Say, doctor, did you hear that? This man is Rebecca's favorite schoolteacher. The old man turned his unfocused, watery eyes toward Ray DeLuke through the dozen or so coffee and whiskeys he'd already consumed, rendered it doubtful he saw more than a blur. Dr. Knickerbocker, this is Mr. DeLuke, said Mr. Bob as he sidled sneakily away. Dost thou claimest to hold such abilities and inspirations that render thee fit to instruct that blessed Christian child? Dr. Knickerbocker bellowed. Well, I have been licensed to... Ray began, needing a gulp of his drink before speaking. Dost thou drop to thy sinful knees each dawn, and dost to pray to thy sober, angry, omnipotent, piteous Lord? Dr. Knickerbocker bellowed louder. Ray looked at him speechless. Or shouldst thy weak will back be hauled to the village whipping post for a strongly invoked lesson in piety and reverence? Dr. K slammed his cane down on the bar with a resounding crack, and DeLuke nearly tumbled from his seat. He mewed forlornly with his eyes to Mr. Bob for immediate rescue. Now, doctor, said Mr. Bob as he replaced Dr. K's coffee-laced whiskey with a fresh one, this young man is Rebecca's favorite schoolteacher. She talked to you about him before. Dr. K creakily slipped from his stool and hobbled weakly over to DeLuke. Ray found it hard to remain fearful before this short wreckage of a man.
You sure?
Yeah, sure.
Huh.
As that blessed girl deems you fit, so I welcome you here. And he offered a trembly crunched hand at DeLuke. But mind my sentiments, sir. Should you fall from the high estimation of that child, My wrath will overwhelm thee and give thee powerful intimations of the unbearable sensations you will feel on thy judgment day. Dr. K hissed venomously. Have a drink on me. He added casually as he limped back to his stool. 16. Lunatese Cafe's band room was beset with the frequent spasmic outbursts of Joey Brown, a long-haired truck-driving hippie who passed through the city irregularly, but always stopped at Lunatese when he was around. He saw apparitions on the stage not visible to the common eye. He saw noisy children rocking hard and well, admired the long-haired lead guitarist. Play it like Clapton, he bellowed and sloshed the drink in his mug. His weathered and sometimes weary cock ripened at the sight of the brunette bass player in tight jeans and blonde keyboardist in swirling gown. I'm your backdoor man, baby, he cried, though the band was running through a Beatles song at that moment. The bald little drummer was a manic who drank steadily through the show. Joey'd always wanted to buy the man a drink or something, but a bad case of starstruckness prevented him. And lead singer, that big motherfucker with that acoustic guitar. Shit, men like him are getting scarce these days. All these new bands with ponytails and earrings and pouty lips like the high school girls who used to blow them outside the back of the gym. Joey danced and sang and shouted and got gloriously drunk. The barman kept Joey's glass filled, though for the life of him he couldn't get Jim Reality off his fat-ass bar stool and into the show. Not once had he become aware that he was alone in a darkened room. Then somebody spoke. That's where my dad plays, with his band, I mean. I remember him playing there when I was a kid. He likes it better than all those other places. Looking down, Joey beheld a young girl in jeans and sweater. Pretty kid, familiar somehow. Shit, you're his kid, Joey yelled, awed. Yes, I'm Joey Brown. I'm a big fan of your old man's. He reminds me of the old days. Joey awkwardly grasped Rebecca's hand briefly and shook it. I've been reading his poetry book, she says, and, drawing what I see. My old teacher got me started for an assignment, but I kept doing it. Would you like to see? Pretty smile, Joey thinks. My boy could do a lot worse than her. Him and his shaven-headed little dyke friends. Rebecca leads Joey back into the bar room, and they sit at the corner of the bar. Mr. Bob fetches him a fresh pint of St. Pauli Girl. Joey's a little dizzy. The music he heard from the band room all night is now silent. This one's about a Rilke poem, says the girl. Still dizzy, Joey looks at the picture, and smiles, and he tries to pay attention. The end. End of part one. Okay. Go ahead. We're going to do a fling, Jim. Mark and I are going to do a fling. You rest.
Today I tramped through nascent spring, through air made moist by drying flooded fields. Today I meandered over streets untraveled, during a 20-year slumber past woods new scented with balsam. Today I stood before a shred of branches where new leaves will cover a secluded observer. Today I tramped through a nascent spring, through moistened air, to an incisure where a soul may hide.
Or to a what?
To an incisure, a place that has come away.
Oh.
Something silent cups me tonight, a thing of passing moment, a thing obscure, a thing I can't name, a sentiment. A sense of going, a sense of not coming back. This thing happens at night, a broken rail of similar moods, similar things, light and cupping.
This is entitled Ghazal. It's a form of Middle Eastern poetry. I have taken up residence this dawn in a kingdom of straw lawns. Past octagonal tiles that blight this day, I walk through the world of straw lawns. A glazed plaster Jesus points skyward as I traverse the heaven of straw lawns. Spires of green above the Dairy Queen, she reigns in the world of straw lawns. Racing Saturday nights, Mark, what a treat for those of us in the land of straw lawns.